We got a lot of ground to cover, so let's get to the book of Ruth just as soon as we possibly can. Open your book, your Bible up to the book of Ruth, and let's just do some quick review of some things we've already looked at. It only has four chapters, and so we need to be studying the book of Ruth. Chapter 1 has about four divisions. If you look at the book of Ruth, and you'll see it begins with the moving from Bethlehem to Moab. Now, if you do not know the book of Ruth, you don't know who moved or anything, but we know that Elimelech and his wife Naomi and their sons moved down to Moab because there was a famine in the land. And then chapter 1 tells of the moving back. When they got down in that land, the two sons die, the husband dies. And so you've got two daughter-in-laws, and these daughter-in-laws with Naomi head back toward the promised land. One of the daughter-in-laws, anybody remember her name? It rhymes with Oprah. Orpah, all right, Orpah. I don't know, I remember the first time I ever saw Oprah on the television screen, and I thought, somebody cannot even spell good. And all of a sudden, I cannot even pronounce Orpah. When I look at that word, my dyslexic mind wants me to call her Oprah, but that's not who it is. It's Orpah. And she does go back, and then Ruth says, I'm going to go, and I'm going to leave behind. We noticed this last week. I'm going to leave behind my gods. That is an amazing thing. She's been raised pagan, and she heads back toward with Naomi. Ruth heads back with Naomi back to the promised land. And she says, whither thou goest, I will go. You know where you lodge, that's where I lodge. Your people shall be my people. And then the most emphatic thing, your God shall be my God. She not only changed a few things about her life, she changed her understanding of God. I believe that says something about Ruth, and perhaps it says something about the life that Naomi had lived in front of her. Because Naomi is in many respects. We're not going to spend a lot of time looking at this. Let's just take a quick look at the map, and we don't seem to have the slides here, but skip that. Let's get to the things where we ended last week, and I don't want to spend much time at all, but it was during the time of the judges. And so last week we deviated enough from the study of the book of Ruth to talk about God's plan. Oh, it's up here and not back there. Thank you for somebody showing me that. There it is. Okay, and there is the map. You see where Moab is, and you see where Bethlehem is. Those are the two places. So there's famine up in that land, and when they get after the famine is over, I believe that the period says it was 7 years, they head back toward the promised land, and only Ruth and Naomi. Now, let's look at the government that God intended, and this is what we spent some time looking at, and that was when they entered into the promised land, there was a theocracy. We know what a monarchy is. We know what a democracy is, but the word theocracy is something we may not know. But if you'll understand, we have civil law, and then we have religious laws, and by that I mean the Bible. Now, in some lands and in some cultures, particularly the Muslim country, they have a theocracy. The entirety of that land is governed by the Quran, and it's a combination of the fact that the laws of the Muslim religion supersede any other law. And so in parts of our land, up in Detroit, up in that area, there are large Muslim communities, and they have set up a theocratic courts. They've set up Muslim courts up in those cities because those laws supersede the law of God, and they're bypassing the laws of the land and going against the laws of our own land up in that area. It will not work. A theocracy will not work unless it is forced on the entirety of the people of a culture. If you stop and think about it, remember the Sabbath day to keep it holy. Would that be possible in America to make not the Sabbath day, but to make Sunday a holy day? What do you think would happen if the decree went out that you cannot, and living under the Old Testament law, you cannot build a fire, you cannot pick up firewood, you cannot cook, you cannot work, you've got to take a day off. How many people do you think would abide by that law in this culture? It's folly. I would not be surprised if Sunday is not fast approaching the busiest shopping day there is. What do you do on Sunday? Well, if you ever notice the traffic driving down here to the building, if you get on the interstate, there's no traffic on Sunday morning. It's just, there's almost no traffic at all. Any other day of the week, you know, you head down the interstate, man, there's traffic everywhere. But Sunday is a day where it's a rest day, but not a holy day. It's a day that you sleep in because of what's happened Saturday night, and so you're just late trying to get up, a theocracy. And it will work. And we finished the class last week by pointing out that the founders of our country said our Constitution will only work in a nation where people are Christians. When we tried to go into Iraq and impose a Western culture in Iraq, how did that turn out? You know, you think about everything that was involved in it. I'm sure politicians thought we'd go in there and get rid of Saddam Hussein, and everybody will want to be either Republican or Democrat. That's a stretch, but how did that turn out? They were so used to theocratic law that it simply did not work. And then, of course, you had the divisions among the Muslims. God's plan was for there to be those 12 tribes distinct in their nature to go into that land and for there to be no central government other than God. And so it is that God gave judges to decide disputes over things, oftentimes over civil things, where the law had not been, situations were described that did not happen. Think of our Supreme Court in that serious, but it was far, far greater than that, far more power than that. And he intended for them to be a united nation, one nation, without central government. There were 12 distinct tribes. If we think about the United States of America, that was a bonding of 7 different geographical areas and under a central government. Now, they had a central government, and that was God. You can have that in a theocracy. So if an issue came up, here's what God says ought to be done about that. And you read the book of Leviticus, and it's amazing how much civil law there is in the book of Genesis. It tells you how much, whether you can charge usury, charge interest or not on your loans, and under what circumstances you can try. It even has laws about animals that die, or, you know, if we talked about roadkill, could you eat roadkill under that law? And there were 3 laws that he gave in relationship to it. The Jews could not eat it. They could sell it to the Gentiles, and those strangers that lived among them, they could give it to them. And that's an amazing, that's theocracy. We're talking about an animal that dies on its own. What do you do with the body of it? Well, here's the law of God that tells you what you can do about it. Now, we've got all kinds of laws that deal with situations similar to that, but there was no king but God. And the Lord told them, and you need to read Deuteronomy chapter 17 and 1 Samuel chapter 10 to see what happens whenever the people rebelled against God's arrangement of having a theocracy and said, we want a king to be over us. Look in 1 Samuel chapter 10, and this is about where we finished last week. Samuel called all of Israel together, and he says, why is that not where I thought it was? I said 1 Samuel 10 and verse 8, and I'm in 1 Samuel 10 and verse 8, and it's on the wrong side of the page. Well, it must be in the Deuteronomy passage. Look in Deuteronomy 17. I don't think that's the passage I wanted. Deuteronomy 17, told that you have a king, he's to make a handwritten copy of his own Bible. And he is to read that, he is to read that Bible every day. I'm apologizing because I know where it ought to be and it's not there. Is it in Second First Samuel? What? 1 Samuel, what? 24? Verse 24. Is that what you're saying? Yes. Oh, that's where he's to make the copy of the book. Okay. No. But he says to them that if you put a king over you, what's he going to do? He's going to tax you. He's going to take your land. He's going to take your choicest property. It's going to be his own property. And he will take your sons and your daughters, and he'll make them work for him. He'll create an army. And I'm sorry that somebody find that. This will be the nature of the king. If you can find that, that's critical. And I have no idea why it ought to be in 1 Samuel chapter. Maybe it's 8:10 instead of 10:8. Maybe I put it the wrong way. Let me look in 1 Samuel 10:8. 8:10, yes, okay. I have been known to do that before, and so that I went to my favorite place of making a mistake, and so it's 8:10, okay? It's 8:10. He says, verse 11, 1 Samuel chapter 10, verse 11. Think about this in relationship to our own government in this land. And so he says, this will be the behavior of the king who will reign over you, and he will take your sons and appoint them to be his own for his own chariots and to be horsemen. Some of them will run before his chariots. He will appoint captains over thousands and captains over fifties. Get them to plow the ground, reap the harvest, make weapons of war and equipment for his chariot. He will take your daughters to be perfumers, cooks, and bakers. And he will take the best of your fields, the vineyard, your olive groves, and give them to his servants. Take a tenth of your grain and your vineyards. He'll take your male servants, verse 17. He will take a tenth of your sheep, and you will be his servants, and you will cry out to the Lord because you've chosen the king. And you stop and look about it. This is not a political class. I just think it is a commentary on us seeing God's plan for Israel. There was to be no central government. And so God raised up a warrior, raised up somebody to lead them. And so in the period of the judges oftentimes were warriors. They were the men who led the armies. Even Deborah, remember her and the battles that she fought to destroy the enemies of God. And so God raised them up, leaders, but his plan was them to get into that land and obey God, and everything would have been wonderful. In fact, he said, you go into that land and serve me, and I will not even let the enemies fight against you on the Sabbath day. Isn't that an amazing concept? You go into that land and you serve me and be devoted to me in the Old Testament, and when the Sabbath day comes and you're not supposed to work, don't worry about it. Your enemies will not even attack you on that day. Now, when they got to the land, they turned against and they profaned the Sabbath and everything, and all of those things happened. We got a lot of ground to cover, so let's get back to the story of the Ruth, and we get them over into Bethlehem, and now let's talk about what happens when they get in the grain field. Open your Bibles to the book of Ruth, and go to chapter 2. But before we look at chapter 2. We need to understand a biblical principle that was found in the age before the law was ever given. We call that age the patriarchal age, before there was the law of Moses. We're going to look at the law, what happens if a man marries a woman and has no children. And then, when we get a little bit further, and the law is given, we'll look at the passages. But It is in Genesis chapter 38. Genesis chapter 38, Judah, who's Judah's father? Any idea who Judah's father is? Let's get a historical perspective. If I ask you who's Judah's brother, could you tell me who Judah's brother is? If I tell you, could you name Judah's 11 brothers? Reuben, Simeon, Levi, Judah, and then you get Joseph. His father's Jacob. And so Jacob took a wife, arranged a marriage for his firstborn, and her name was Tamar. This is significant because Tamar is in the begets. And so here's a story in the Old Testament that seemingly is insignificant, and yet when it comes to the genealogy of Jesus, Tamar is mentioned in that. So it is and Tamar, but Judah's firstborn, was wicked in the sight of the Lord, and the Lord killed him. And so Judah said to Onan, "Go into your brother's wife and marry her and raise up an heir to your brother." We talked last week about the fact that those boundaries that were set when they went to the promised land, and those tribal boundaries were set, were to remain. Bulletin article this week talked about remove not the ancient landmarks. Probably had in view these very landmarks that had been placed by the decree of Moses and became the boundaries of the land. But what happens to that land? What happens to that land if there's no heir to receive it? And so this problem develops once again in the promised land, but in the background is what happens. Onan, this individual, took and went in to his brother's wife. She's a widow, and he's lying with her, but instead of finishing the act that would produce children, he withdrew himself and spilled his seed upon the ground. Look what happens to that man. And the thing, verse 10, the thing which he did displeased the Lord, he killed him. That gives seriousness to this matter of the possession of the lands and the rights of that. That's an amazing story. Haven't read that one. It's 6 verses in the Old Testament. Enjoy reading it because there's some things in it that you may have never heard. Now, when the law is given, let's go to that next slide, and that is the liberate law, this word liberate is a Latin word, and it means the husband's brother. And so in the heading of my Bible over in Deuteronomy chapter 25, starting in verse 5, here is what is said. If brothers dwell together and one of them dies and has no son, the widow of the dead man shall not be married to a stranger outside of the family. Her husband's brother shall go into her, take her as his wife, and perform the duty of her husband's brother to her. And it shall be that the firstborn which he bears will succeed in the name of the dead brother, that his name might not be blotted off the earth. A lot of that has to do with property. It has to do with who that land belongs to. And last week when we studied earlier, we said that land still, when Naomi gets back, that land still belonged to the wife of Elimelech. Why? Because you cannot, it's very difficult to transfer that land. And then he said, now if a man does not want to take his brother's wife, then let the brother's wife go to the gates of the cities of Israel and say, my husband's brother refuses to raise up a name to his brother in Israel. He will not perform the duty of the husband's brother. Then the elders of this city shall call him and speak to him. But if he stands firm and says, I do not want to take her, then the brother's wife shall come to him in the presence of the elders, take off his sandal from his foot, spit in his face, and answer and say, so shall it be done to the man who will not build up his brother's house. And his name shall be called the house of him who has his sandals removed. It's really the one who is barefooted. And so there was this symbolism. When an individual would not take his brother's wife, would not fulfill his duty, that she had the right to go before the elders of the city, take his sandals off of him, spit in his face. And he was called an evil name in the tribe. Here is a man who is rebellious against God. He will not perform his duty. Now, if you do not understand this, you will not understand the rest of the book of Ruth. There are some things in this second chapter that truly are amazing in relationship to this. And so let's go into it. Let's open up our Bibles to Ruth chapter 2, and I do not have these verses on the screen. You'll need to have your Bibles open. Because Ruth is in the land, now how is she going to be taken care of? Especially, how is Naomi going to be taken care of? And so Ruth, who says, your people shall be my people and your God shall be my God, guess what the Jews were told to do in their harvest? They could not gather the grain that was in the corn or in the corner of the field. They were forbidden by God to do that. Off topic, but rather interesting to show the impact of the Old Testament on laws in America. In Tennessee, the law in Tennessee, still on the books as far as I know, is if your neighbor has a field of corn, you can go over there anytime you want to get enough corn to feed your family for that night. And that's a reflection of some of this law was there. They were also told, when you've harvested your grape, you cannot go back the second time. I don't know if you've ever picked cotton or not, but sometimes you could go back the second time, and people had left cotton in that cotton bowl, and I forget what you call that kind of picking of cotton. Novell, you remember that? I did that when I was a kid, but I can't remember. It's licking, something licking. I cannot remember what it was. I don't know what phrase they used for it. Then you'd have to go back into the second time. They were not allowed to do that. And if they harvested the grain that fell on the ground, they were not allowed to go back and reap the grain again. That was Old Testament law. And so in chapter 2, when you get there was a relative of Naomi's husband, a man of great wealth of the family of Elimelech. His name was Boaz. So Ruth the Moabite says to Naomi, this tells you something about Ruth. You stop and think about it. Please let me go to the field and glean heads of grain after him in whose sight I may find favor. When we studied about grace and understanding grace, we mentioned this very story. The word grace, translated favor, is found, I believe it's 4 times in this book. I'm going to go over there and maybe I'll be able to find grace. What's grace? Rewards that are given that you don't deserve. And she left and went to glean in the field after the reapers. She happened to come to the part of the field belonging to Boaz. And now when Boaz came from Bethlehem and said to the reapers, the Lord be with you. And they said, the Lord bless you. Then Boaz said to his servants, who was in charge of the reapers, who is that young woman? Who is she? I've got reapers out in the field. I've got another person out in the field, and she's reaping, but she's not where the reapers are. So the servants who were in the charge of the reaper answered and said, that's a young Moabite woman who's come back with Naomi from the country of Moab. And he said, she said, please let me glean and gather after the reapers among the sheaves. So they came, and so she came and has continued from morning until now, though she rested a little while in the house. Boaz says to Ruth, you will listen to my daughter, will you not? Do not go to glean in another field. Do not go to another place. Stay close to my young men. Let your eyes be on the field which they reap and go after them. Have I not commanded the young men not to touch you? And when you're thirsty, go to the vessels and drink from what the young men have drawn. So she fell on her face and bowed her face to the ground and said to them, why have I found grace in your eyes? Interesting concept of grace. We say the same thing when we sing Amazing Grace that saved a wretch like me. I'm a foreigner and I'm here eating the produce of the land of the Jews. And that you should take notice of me since I am a foreigner. Boaz answered and said to her, "It has been fully reported to me all of what you have done for your mother-in-law since the death of your husband, and how you have left your father and your mother and the land of your birth and have come to a people whom you did not know before. The Lord repay your work and a full reward be given to you by the glory of the God of Israel under whose wings you have come for refuge. Your God shall be my God." I'm telling folks, it pays to do right. It pays to do right all the time. Then she said, "Let me find grace in your sight." There it is again, verse 13. "My Lord, for you have comforted me and have spoken kindly to your maidservant, though I'm not like one of your maidservants." Boaz said to her at mealtime, "Come and eat of the bread, and dip your bread in the vinegar." So she sat beside the reapers, and he passed parched grain to her, and she ate and was satisfied, and kept some back. When she arose up to glean, Boaz commanded the young men, saying, "Let her be given," think grace, "let her be given, let her glean even among the sheaves, and do not reproach her. And let grain from the bundles fall purposefully for her. Leave it that she may glean, do not rebuke her." Is this why this maybe book has been called the greatest love story ever written? I mean, there are some things that are happening. And also, let grain from the bundles of wheat fall. That's verse 16. So she gleaned in the field until evening and beat out what she had gleaned, and it was about an ephah of barley, I think. Then she took it up and went into the city, and her mother-in-law saw she was glad. So she brought out and gave it to what she had kept back after she had been satisfied. She not only carried the wheat, she brought her leftovers. She got one of those to-go boxes, and she carried some of it home with her. Then she took it up and went into the city, and she shared it. And her mother-in-law said to her, "Where have you gleaned today, and where did you work? Blessed is the one who noticed." She told her mother-in-law and said where she had worked, and the man's name with whom I work today is Boaz. And Naomi says, "Blessed be the Lord who has not forsaken his kindness in the things and the dead." And Naomi said to her, "This man is a relative of ours, one of our close relatives." Ruth says to her, "He also said to me, you shall stay close by my young men until they have finished their barley." And Naomi said to Ruth, her daughter-in-law, "It is good, my daughter, that you go out with the young women and that people do not meet you in other fields." So she stayed close by the young women of Boaz to glean until the end of the barley harvest and the wheat harvest, and she dwelt with her mother-in-law. On the screen, I've got, isn't that funny that she was so lucky? I've got the word accidentally. It's all by accident. That's not the way Naomi looks at it. You remember Naomi says, "Don't call me Naomi," which means pleasant. "Call me Mara," which means bitter. Guess what? Naomi's not as bitter now. And sometimes we get frustrated because we don't see God, and sometimes we get in that situation, but we need to understand that God truly is with us. I think that's it. Let's look in chapter 3 now. Chapter 3. Naomi, her mother-in-law, said to her, "My daughter, shall I not seek security for you that it may be well with you?" "You've done so much for me," Naomi says. "I'm going to do something for you. Boaz, whose young women you were with, is he not a relative? In fact, he is winnowing barley tonight at the threshing floor." You know what winnowing is? You remember John the Baptist talked about Jesus winnowing the grain. The grain was Israel. But John the Baptist says he's got an axe in his hand cutting the trees, and he's got a winnowing fan, Matthew chapter 3. He's ready to blow away the chaff of ungodliness from the nation of Israel that he might gather the grain, the good grain, as it falls to the earth. Now that's what Boaz is going to be doing tonight. He's going to be, he's brought the grain in, and so tonight he is going to be winnowing the grain. And so he says, "It shall be when he's finished with the grain that you shall notice the place where he lies down, and you shall go in, uncover his feet, and lie down, and he will tell you what you should do." Really a weird statement, and you need to read it carefully, because this is not a sexual act that she does when she lies at his feet, and the Bible's very specific about that. And she said, "Everything you tell me to do, that's what I'll do." She went down to the threshing floor, according to all the mother-in-law, and after Boaz had eaten and drunk, and his heart was cheerful, he went to lie down at the end of the heap of grain. And she came softly, uncovered his feet, and lay down. At midnight, the man was startled and turned himself, and a woman was lying at his feet. And he said, "Who are you?" I don't know what you'd say if you woke up in the middle of the night and there's a woman lying, you know, under the foot of the covers. But I mean, who are you? And she says, "I am Ruth, your maidservant. Take your maidservant under your wing, for you are a close relative." You know what she's doing? Ruth knows the laws of God, and she is invoking upon Boaz to fulfill the very thing that was found in those verses in Deuteronomy. And if you don't know those verses in Deuteronomy, this is such a mystery. It's a part of their culture. She says, "Take me under your wing." God made provisions for widows. I'm a widow. My mother-in-law is a widow. Take us under your wing. You have a God-given obligation, though she does not use the word God. And he says, Boaz says, "Blessed are you of the Lord, my daughter, for you have shown more kindness at the end than at the beginning, in that you did not go after the young men, whether rich or poor." Young woman, attractive enough, I'm assuming attractive, she could have had those young men had she wanted them. But she didn't want them. She did not want Boaz in a physical way. "Take me under your wing." By the way, when you have grace, you're under the wings of God. "And now, my daughters, do not fear. I will do for you all that you've requested, for all the people of my town know that you are a virtuous woman." Isn't that amazing? What'd she live like? What kind of life did she live? I don't know how long she's been there. We're near the end of the harvest. She went there when they were starting the harvest, the barley harvest, and now it's near the end of the harvest. And she said, "It is true, I'm a close relative. However, I'm not first in line. There is a closer relative. It shall be that he will perform the duty of a close relative for you. Good. Let him do it. But if he does not want to perform the duty for you, I will perform the duty for you as the Lord lives. Lie down until morning." So she lay at his feet until morning. She arose before one could recognize another. Then he said, do not let it be known that the woman came to the threshing floor. Also he says, bring the shawl that is on you and hold it. And she held it up and measured, and one, I've got six ephods, a bushel of wheat is one rendering of this. You know how much a bushel is? Think of a bushel basket full of wheat. Imagine carrying that back. And then she went into the city, and her mother-in-law said, is that you, my daughter? Then she said, told her all that the maid had done, and she said, these six ephods of barley he gave me, for he had said to me, do not go empty-handed to your mother-in-law. Then she said, sit still, my daughter, until you know how this matter will turn out. How about that psalm that says, wait on the Lord? Just trust God. Got things troubling in your life? Just trust God. If you will read this story and you will become Ruth, you will be filled with worry and awe and dismayed unless you have God in the story. Your God should be my God. Chapter 4, let's get to chapter 4. Boaz went up to the gates and sat down, and behold, the close relative of whom Boaz had spoken came by. Boaz, come, friend, sit down here. So he came, and he took 10 men of the elders of the city and said, sit down here. Got witnesses, 10 witnesses, elders of the city. He said to the close relative, Naomi, who has come back from the country of Moab, sold the piece of land which belongs to our brother Elimelech. And I thought to inform you, saying, buy it back in the presence of the inhabitants and the elders of my people. You're the closest relative. There is that land, and you need to buy it. If you will redeem it, redeem it. But if you will not redeem it, tell me that it may be known, for there's no one but you to redeem it, and I'm next after you. And he said, I will redeem it. Read it carefully. I'm going to do it. Then Boaz said, on the day you buy the field from the hand of Naomi, you must also buy it from Ruth the Moabitess, the wife of the dead, to perpetuate the name of the dead through his inheritance. And the close relative said, I cannot do that for myself, lest I ruin my own inheritance. He already had his land. It appears, the implication is, he may have been childless. That may be the implication. And if I get this land over here that belongs to a wife named Ruth, and I've got this other land that is going to be of the seed of my first wife, he says, I cannot do it. He says, I cannot redeem it for myself, lest I ruin my own inheritance. You redeem my right of redemption for yourself, for I cannot redeem it. Now there was a custom in former times in Israel concerning redeeming and exchanging to confirm anything. One man took off his sandal and gave it to the other, and this was the confirmation in Israel. That's a little bit different from taking the sandal off and spitting in his face. But that on which you used to stand, you have yielded that right, and I want that sandal that's on your foot because I'm going to stand on that land. And so there are these witnesses that are there. So he takes off his sandal, and Boaz says to the elders, you are witnesses this day that I brought all that was Elimelech's and all that was Chilion and Mahlon from the hand of Naomi. Moreover, Ruth the Moabitess, the widow of Mahlon, I have acquired as my wife to perpetuate the name of the dead through his inheritance, that the name of the dead may not be cut off from among the brethren. And from his possession at the grave, you are witnesses this day. And all the people who were in the land and the elders We are witnesses. The Lord make the woman who has come to your house like Rachel and like Leah, the two who built the house of Israel, and may you prosper in Ephrathah and be famous in Bethlehem. May your house be like the house of Perez, whom Tamar bore to Judah because of the offspring which the Lord will give you from this young woman. Rachel, Leah, Tamar had lots of kids. May God bless you in relationship to all of this. So Boaz took Ruth, and she became his wife. And when he went into her, the Lord gave her conception. She bore a son. The woman says to Naomi, "Blessed be the Lord who has not left you this day without a close relative, and may his name be famous in Israel. And may he be to you a restorer of life and a nourisher." Quit being bitter. Look what God's done for you. Of you in your old age, and for your daughter-in-law who loves you, who is better to you than seven sons born to her. Naomi took the child, laid him on her bosom, and became a nurse to him. And the neighbor's women gave him a name. This is the son born to Naomi. And they called his name Obed. Obed was the father of Jesse, who was the father of David. You don't have to have this story in the Bible. I think it's amazing. All of the things that happened, God chose to put this story in the Bible. Now I go back, and I'm going to change what I just said. You do need to have this story in the Bible. But I find it interesting, of all the events that happened, those which God gave access to. And I think it is interesting to look about Ruth. And if you want to see her, just look at all the adjectives used to describe her. She's virtuous. I've heard of what you have done, you know, and blessed are you, blessed are you, blessed are you. I think we've got any minutes left at all. Nope, that's it. That's it. All right. We'll have a special teacher here next week, and he's sitting right over here. Dominique from Trinidad will be teaching this class next week. So he's here to work with our young people, so keep that in mind. At camp, I guess. You're going to camp? You're going to work with our young people at camp. All right. Thank you very much.